Welcome back to the Bold Scientist Under the Shower. Yes, as every second Monday of the month, we are here with some special guests tonight. Very, very special. So the future of science, I would say. Indeed, as I advertise the show of tonight on Facebook, we have three very brilliant students from the Faculty of Psychology and Neuroscience at Maastricht University. They're actually here because they won the prize as the best research project in a course called Research Practical. I coordinate, actually. And they're here to talk us to talk about three very interesting topic. So I'm gonna just provide you an outline. So we're gonna start with Konstantinos. Hi, Konstantinos, how are you doing?
Hi, Francesco. Thank you for your kind words.
Yeah, really, of course. Good. I mean, thank you. We're going to talk us about leaving the matrix. And in a few seconds, you're going to hear what such a mysterious title is about. Then we're going to proceed with the Haas. Hi, how are you doing? Uh-huh. First of all, I'm pronouncing your name, although we have been together for 12 weeks. I still don't know how to pronounce your name.
It's fine. I've gotten used to it. But I pronounce it as Guus.
Guus.
Of course, on where from the Netherlands you're from, but I'll take anything. Even Goose is fine. I'll just quack in the microphone.
Okay. So he's going to talk us about Speak. So the title of his research is Speak the Music. And we're all curious about your research, Guus. But, and so we're going to end with a super, that's why we put it actually at the end. We are super interesting. I mean, also the other two topics that will be super interesting. But what are you going to talk to us about, Zoe? This is the third guest we have.
Well, yeah, hi. I'm going to talk about sex today.
All right, let's talk about sex, baby.
Exactly.
Thank you, Zoe. Okay, so let's start with Konstantinos. So Leaving the Matrix. So indeed, the song from the movie Barbie, I think is a good introduction of your topic. And we're going to understand in a few seconds why. So what actually this Leaving the Matrix means, Konstantinos?
Okay, so Living in the Matrix was a title we came up with because we live, you know, in a world where we constantly produce data, we're always connected. And it reminds me, you know, of how it was when the internet became available. It shifted our life in ways that we couldn't imagine back then, right? So now, one more time, this happens, only now we're talking about a different form of technology or systems, you could say. And I'm talking about artificial intelligence, right? So you have to think of it as a system that it is trained on big amount of data and it is good at producing predictions, but also the same results as the data, right? Now, that wasn't only curiosity. What I mean by this is that there are different tools that they use this way of analyzing data and producing results. One example would be, for example, creating images. So you get a system, you train it on, for example, faces, and eventually you could ask, okay, I give you a picture of myself, and then I want you, I don't know, to create a picture of me in Paris, or a picture of me smiling or laughing, or make my eyes look straight instead of the other way. So that can also be applied in videos, right? So you can create, as you can imagine, there are many opportunities about this, right? You can use it in a good way. It can make your life easier. For example, if you're a graphic designer, you can create an image out of nowhere when there is nothing there. But then there's the risk of creating something that isn't real, a fake. And I'm talking about, you know, the term deepfake, where you can actually even see videos that a tool like this can create. And you can have, for example, the face of Obama, an ex-president of the United States, saying things like singing happy birthday to your grandma, or, you know.
Yeah, no, I recently actually saw one of the Italian politicians speaking in French. So this guy cannot even speak in Italian, right? So I was amazed, but it was indeed created by artificial intelligence. So it's quite crazy and scary, as you were describing, what those kind of tools can do.
Exactly. And what's important now is that these tools can also create text. I'm talking about an example is ChatGPT,
yeah,
which it is trained on human language, and then it can reproduce text. Again, as you can imagine, you can use it in a way that helps your life, like rephrasing or something like this. But then people can also create it to, for example, write a scientific paper for you.
Yes, exactly. And as a teacher, I'm very worried about.
Exactly.
So they can do that, right? They yes. can kind of fake a scientific paper or scientific abstract. So it's now, crazy.
You can say it is fake, but in some cases, the result might be really good, because you have to take into account that they are trained on real data, and some of the things that it reproduces are accurate, but others are total fiction. So this is how this study came into life, because we said, okay, there is an opportunity, but there are also some problems with it. So the idea behind this study was if we can actually train people to detect whether a text is generated from AI or human text.
Yeah, that's yeah, quite interesting. And so how did you address actually this research question?
Exactly. So you came up with an idea, you know, and then you're like, okay, but how do I go for it? So what we did is there is research previously done. The previous research was focused on differences between text generated from humans and AI. So what I mean by this, one example was repetition. So AI texts tend to be repetitive. There might be a phrase, for example, that is repeated two times in the same paragraph or three. So what we did is we used those differences as criteria.
Okay, so there was a study before yours. They actually found out, tried to find some differences between the text created by human and the text created by artificial intelligence, namely ChatGPT, right?
Exactly.
Okay, you use this criteria to create, I think, your training? So
exactly. So okay. What we did is we used those criteria to form a training that then people would take part in our training, and then we would test them whether they are able to detect or not AI.
Okay. Text. Very good. So what your training, so can you kind of briefly describe the training? So they were presented okay. with some text, I guess?
Okay, so the idea is that we had two groups for the training. One that actually took the training itself, and another group that didn't take part in the training, but they got tested on the same text as the group that took the training.
Okay, of course, in order to test whether your training was effective, you need to test, you need to train one group and, I mean, test another group on the same kind of task. Okay, that's
exactly.
Clear.
That was a way to ensure that, okay, indeed, the reasons that people were able to detect, for example, AI texts were because of the training and not because, for example, it could be that they are fluent in English, or another example that they are familiar with that text. So then that can explain the reason why they detected it. So what we did is we designed the training, then they got tested, and then those results were analyzed to come to our conclusion.
Okay, great. So so there was two phases, right? So the training, where you train a specific group of subjects, and then you test on brand new texts, both the trained group and the untrained, some subject that actually were not trained at all. And what did you find? So they will manage. So your training was actually effective. Did they manage these groups to the trained group to perform better than the untrained one?
Okay, so the results were exciting and really interesting actually to see in practice what the effects of the training were. So it was really interesting to see, because we used two different types of text. We used formal text, which I'm referring to abstracts of scientific studies that are already published out there. They are available to the public. And we asked ChatGPT to create the exact same title, only it writes it, its own abstract. And then the second group of the text that we used were blog posts. Again, we followed the same process. And then indeed we chose some of the text and we tested the subjects. So what we found was that for the scientific text, so the abstracts, there was no effect of the training. So what I mean by this is that there wasn't any indication that our training had an impact.
So the trained and the untrained group performed the same.
Exactly.
That's what they are saying. Exactly. Okay.
And that is really interesting because if you take into account that our population that we tested this study, right, they were students. As a student, you get really familiar with reading an abstract. So it made sense to us that since both are trained, are really familiar with that type of text, there wasn't any effect of the training there. However...
So indeed, now I'm very curious to know what is about the blog post.
Exactly.
So were there some difference? Because I think that both group, they were not familiar with blog posts, right?
Exactly. So that was the interesting part, that because many people do not even read blog posts, myself included, I'm not interested, you know? So what happened there, we found an effect of the training.
Oh, wow.
That's why incredible. I said that it was really exciting for us to actually see that, oh, okay, it makes sense what we find
out. Yeah, exactly.
So there indeed the trained group did better in detecting AI text than the untrained group.
That's quite amazing. Also, because as a teacher, I know what the importance of such a training. So probably you should tell me what the training was about, so more detail, because indeed, we don't know anymore, also as a as teacher, what is true and what is fake, because as a matter of fact, a lot of students, I heard once also people bragging, students bragging that were using ChatGPT to write their own papers. So it's very good, actually, tool to be used, this training that you designed. So what's next? So what is the future of this research, Konstantinos?
So I'm glad you asked, because, you know, these results are really exciting. However, for example, it would be really interesting to test whether there was a long-term effect on this training. And what I mean by this is both groups were tested immediately after the training. It would be interesting for future research to follow up with new testing after, for example, 3 months. This would prove that indeed this skill was developed and they are still capable of using it.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. So thanks a lot, Konstantinos. You gave me some new tool to check whether students are cheating or not.
Thank you, Francesco, and sorry to the students using ChatGPT.
I'm sorry, guys. Here is a question by Haas to you, Konstantinos. Please.
As a student who is allegedly using ChatGPT, I really find your study interesting. But I had a general question regarding AI. As someone who has been growing up with things like the iPhone and just smartphones in general, we've seen this exponential growth from earlier years into technology and into fields which we couldn't even have imagined 25 years ago. Do you think we'll see the same, not necessarily the same, but the same exponential growth regarding AI and ChatGPT software as we have seen in the past 40 years or, you know, along those lines?
Yeah.
So the idea with these systems is that the more they are trained on data and input that you get for you and me, from you and me and everyone, they become better at doing what they do, right? So I can only speculate here that indeed we will see more applications of it. But that is not necessarily bad, right? I don't want to paint it in a bad picture, because also when internet came out, people were afraid of it. We shouldn't treat it the same way, right?
No, absolutely. So it's always the use that you do about a specific tool and system. But your question is very good. And actually, yeah, you're right. So by definition, those tools that are based on training, so the more year will pass, the more they will be trained, and the better they will be. So indeed, I also would expect an increase, an evolution of those systems. Yeah, we just need to use it in a good way. All right, so now is your turn, Cass, and I'm gonna put some music that is gonna introduce you, namely this song. By the way, the introductory song was from Dua Lipa, was "Dance the Night" from the movie Barbie. Already said that, and the next one will be from this band I love from the 70s. Yeah, unfortunately, my age speaks for it. The group is called Tavares, and the song is called "Don't Take Away the Music." This was "Don't Take Away the Music" from Tavares, group from the 70s, wonderful group. I also have some LPs from there, great. All right, Hus, this was your introductory song, "Don't Take Away the Music," because music is part of your topic. And indeed, your very nice and interesting research project. Actually, you won two prizes. Oh my God, that day. Was in the summer and final symposium, and there were some prizes, and the Goose group won two prizes. Congratulations for that. So the title of your project was Speak the Music. So what do you want to tell us about that?
Thank you for the introduction, Francesco. let me quickly, before I start even talking about the topic, do a quick little like experiment, both to my peers in the studio with me and for the people listening.
Absolutely.
If I ask you just right now, what's the 12th letter in the alphabet? You don't have to answer, but just quickly think about it. The 12th letter in the alphabet.
The 12th.
The 12th, yes. I'll give you a couple of seconds. You know, I see some fingers going up, counting across from me. Well, for some people, they just naturally blurt out 12, in which case that's impressive. But I think for the majority and people of my age, think of maybe a song when thinking of the alphabet. That, of course, maybe being Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, which already paints quite an interesting picture when it comes between language and music. You already see an interesting connection there. And of course, when it comes to English or even other languages, it's all been translated. And learning languages in general is a very important topic. Now, a lot of people speak English. It's one of the most spoken, if not the most spoken language in the world. Even if it's somebody's native language or compared to somebody's second language. Another language which has been increasing in, no one wouldn't say popularity, but increasing in usability, whether it's in the scientific field or economic field, is of course Mandarin Chinese. And I don't have to be Albert Einstein to tell you that there's a lot of differences between a Western language such as English compared to an Eastern language such as Mandarin Chinese. But I think one of the most distinctive differences being that Mandarin Chinese is a tonal language.
What does it mean? So what is the meaning of tonal language? What is a tonal language, Jos?
I think there are many different descriptions on how to explain it, but a great difference to mention is that when it comes to tonal languages, there can be a word, multiple words that's spoken in principle exactly the same, but depending on where you put the emphasis on the accent or where you put the pitch in the word, it can mean something completely different. So for example, maybe the word for mother can be the same word for fish. Now, I love fish and I love my mother, but let me tell you, it was quite an awkward Mother's Day when I confused those two words. But yeah, that's a story for another time and another day. But essentially, that topic got me and my group, or my group and I should say, got us thinking, how can we incorporate learning a new language, which is completely foreign to many Western audiences? How can we improve learning? How can we make it easier? Because as someone who is primarily from a Western country, it can be quite difficult to notice the slight differences in the pitches. It can be quite difficult.
Absolutely. So you were mentioning about accents. You make the example of the fish and mothers, which actually to any Western person, they might sound exactly the same. The only thing that changes is the accent. So how many accent or how many kind of similar or for a Western person sound identical word exist?
On paper, there are around four, I believe.
Yeah.
There's a flat pitch, just, you know, you keep it the same. There's a pitch which goes from up to top. It's a rising pitch. There's a pitch opposite from that. We go from high to low. And there's a pitch which goes from low to high back to low, which can be quite difficult for, as I said, Western audiences to differentiate between. And especially when it comes to conversing in Mandarin Chinese, it can be quite difficult to be able to even keep up or speak it yourself properly. As I said, we don't want to make any mistakes.
Yeah,
that can be too severe.
And and actually, what is the so what did you want to find out? So what actually was what was your main research question?
Yeah, so the topic essentially came through, of course, a brainstorming session. We want to think, how can we link music to learning a foreign language? And we, of course, first dove into some previous research, which dove into the difference between musicians and non-musicians when it came to language learning. I believe this particular study, they also focused on Mandarin Chinese, but do not quote me on that. and we found that, in general, the musicians had a way better pitch perception or even recognizing words in background noise compared to the non-musicians, which already would indicate that perhaps musicians have an edge in learning newer languages. So we essentially came to the question, like, how can we introduce music and how can we implement music when learning a foreign language?
Yeah.
And in general, the way we did this was a bit similar to Konstantinos' project, wherein we had multiple groups, and there was one group where we try to essentially train them by allowing them to see a video of a piano being played. And in the video, they see like a, as again, as I said, either a flat pitch, rising pitch, lowering pitch, or up down pitch. And they could then replicate that, essentially training them to differentiate between the different pitches.
Okay, so let me see whether I understood. So you basically train a group of subjects. Probably the other one that you test later on wasn't trained, like exactly the Constantinos experiment. So you train them by train them on the differences among those four accents by let them watch some people playing piano with the same notes, I mean notes resembling those accents, and playing it at the same time or right afterwards, having watched the video.
The intention was that they could mimic, essentially. They would see a short video of somebody playing notes that corresponded to notes in a music where you would essentially raise the pitch.
Also, probably to engage them more, to let them more, to let them learn better or more.
Also,
this distinction.
Definitely, yeah. We wanted to introduce an interactive element because if you just watch a video of somebody playing some notes in a row, it can be a bit dull compared to, you know, being able to do it yourself. Absolutely. Which was also an important aspect of our Speak the Music. You know, we want to do it ourselves. It's fun.
Exactly. Speak the Music, indeed. All right, so, but actually I think you wanted to see whether this training was effective, right? Like in the Constantinos experiment. So you want to also design some sort of test experiment where you wanted to see whether this type of training was effective. How did you do that?
Yes, our initial experiment, we first of course tested the participants, or we prepared the participants by making them play the piano notes, and they wanted to test them whether or not they could distinguish between the different pitches. So we had essentially eight different words, but they were, four of them were written the same, four of them written the same. But depending on, once again, the pitch, it can be quite difficult to differentiate. So we gave them a program where they would see a picture written out of what the word was supposed to be. So they saw a picture of a fish, and on the background they would hear somebody speaking the Chinese word. And we did that three different times, and they were tasked with deciding whether or not the sound that they heard was matching with the picture that they saw.
Okay, so therefore the picture could be combined with the correct words,
yes.
So or with an incorrect one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so at the beginning, so let me understand. So at the beginning, so it was just by chance whether they got or not the word right, because they didn't know about the word, and then they got a feedback on that.
Yeah, they would of course, just to mention, we want the participants who did not have any previous experience with other tonal languages, just to make sure that we all were on an equal level. But when they were tasked with different deciding whether or not the audio and the visual stimuli actually matched, they would either press yes or no, or the Y or N key on the keyboard, and they would then get immediate feedback whether they were right or wrong.
And so they learned somehow. They learned the association between a specific word and the drawing.
Yes, and that's why we also did it three different times, because during the first time, it was essentially just trial and error. You had to guess, which even on statistic-based, it's not that accurate, of course. And then the second time we did the same experiment again, and we would already see some improvements, but of course still mostly just guessing. But then interestingly, during the third trial of doing the experiment, we would notice some significant increases in the people getting correct answers.
So a significant increase on about the people that were trained on the piano, right?
Yes.
So actually your training on how to distinguish the different accent using the using music, using the piano training, was effective.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that. Sorry for forgetting that. We also had, of course, then the control group, who would also be shown a video with piano keys or piano notes being played. But of course, they were in a more randomized order compared to resembling the pitches that we wanted to differentiate. And what we then found between the group who were trained and the group who wasn't trained in the second or third block, that there was in fact a transfer effect between the people who were trained and learning the words compared to the people who weren't trained.
Wow, quite amazing. So you can, I can learn Chinese this way, you think? So, but I mean, I think there are a lot of implication. There are a lot of implication so about this study, right? So also in terms of education, learning languages, right?
Yeah, definitely. And as I said, learning new languages and especially an up and coming languages as Mandarin Chinese is very important. And of course, there are certain future researches that can be implemented on this. Most importantly, it should be noted that this experiment was a bit more small scale and it was a bit more immediate compared to maybe doing a similar experiment over a longer period of time, making sure that we don't only have students as a target audience and maybe even include people who already have similar experiences with tonal languages, but just not Mandarin Chinese. As should be noted, science is, of course, an never-ending process. We took inspiration from previous research, and hopefully one day somebody may take inspiration from our research. We're all in this together.
Absolutely, a very nice take-home message. But just one question, and then if you guys have questions, but I will start. Do you think that musician might have been better in this type of task compared to non-musician? Or do you think the future research might also add a task where you're going to test for, I don't know, any musical skill or something like that?
That's an interesting question, Francesco. As I said before, there were a lot of different studies done between musicians and non-musicians. We asked the participants whether or not they had any experience with music or just playing music or singing or even dancing in that general area. Unfortunately, we didn't find an association with that, but that can once again be that maybe we either did not have that many musicians or maybe just in general it's the sample. We don't know there. But when it comes to future research, only time can tell, I think. Me, myself, personally, I think there can be an association found, but we'll see.
Okay, to the future guest of this show, yes. This challenge.
One day.
Hey, thanks a lot, Gus. Was kind of very inspiring, and thanks a lot for...
Thank you. Just want to quickly, of course, say to the group as well, for the people listening, it's an amazing job.
Yeah,
and just also to the mentors, you, Wayne, and of course, our lovely host, Francesco the Gentile Giant. That was the one I was preparing.
No, but
for.
It's quite important what you said. Actually, we didn't mention when Konstantinos was speaking that actually this was a group, a teamwork, right? So they were, each of you guys collaborated with other 7 or 8 people, I don't remember. But so it was a teamwork. Everyone was dedicated to a specific task. So you just, I mean, quotation mark, representing, you also did a great job, but so you're representing eight people who did an amazing job indeed. If you are here, it means that you won as a best research project. So it means something, right? All right, so thanks again, Gus. And now so the time is flying. So we only have 20 more minutes, but I think that would be enough to have Zoe talking about her research, talking about sex, because that's what the research is about, what the good sex is. But in order to do that, we're going to first... put some introductory song that you have chosen. Yes. You have chosen this song, right, Zoe?
I have chosen this song.
All right,
yes.
But it was quite easy to choose it, right?
It was. Okay. Let's just listen to it.
Exactly. Let's just listen to it. I don't know whether to say it or not. No, let's not say it. So let's say it at the end. Okay, so enjoy the song, guys.
Put it up one time. Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex.
feeling, of course, how it should be. Those who think it's dirty have a choice. Pick up the needle, press pause, or turn the radio off. Will that stop us, Pep? All right, then, come on, spin.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Make any man's eyes pop. She uses, she got to get whatever she don't got. Fellas droop like fools, but then again, they're only human. The chick was a hit because her body was booming. Gold, pearl, rubies, crazy diamonds. Nothing she wore was ever common. Her dates, heads of state, men of taste, lawyers, doctors. No one was too great for her to get with or even mess with. The press, she says, was next on her list. And believe me, you, it's as good as true. There ain't a man alive that she couldn't get next to. She had it all in the bag. She should have been glad, but she was mad and sad and feeling bad, thinking about the things that she never had. No love, just sex, followed next with a check and a note that last night was dope, 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 dope.
Take it easy. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex.
Do it.
Let's talk about sex.
Gonna play this on the radio.
And why not? Everybody have sex.
I mean, everybody should be making love.
Come on, now, how many guys you know make
Let's
love?
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you.
Let's talk about sex. Haha, at the end. All right. Hi, Zoe. That's your turn now. Last guest. Last but not least. That's
exactly
how the good people would say. How you doing, Zoe?
I'm good. I'm ready to talk about sex.
Oh, okay, let's talk about sex, baby. All right. So, indeed, the title of your research project was Let's Talk About Sex. It's quite an intriguing topic, but yeah, probably you want to tell us about it.
Yes, and we changed the title a bit. We actually made it Let's Talk About Good Sex, Baby, because that was the whole idea of our study. And basically, you have to imagine we were this group of people all interested in sexual research, because sexual research, I mean, we know that almost everyone has sex. It's like a huge topic in the world and in our lives. But there's still a lot of shame and discomfort connected to talking about sex. And that's been shown in many studies. And what we aim to do is make sexual communication easier, improve people's sex life, increase the knowledge. And then we looked into the research, and what we found was a lot of negative sides of sex. So like sexual trauma, dysfunctions, sexually transmitted diseases, all of that leading to relationship problems even, or dissatisfaction, disappointment. And only in the last decade, researchers started looking at, for example, sexual satisfaction. And then we were like, okay, we also want to talk about the good sides of sex, but we're going to start at the base and ask the fundamental question, what is good sex actually? And it's,
so just out of curiosity, so in your kind of background, literature research, so what I'm understanding from what you said is that you find many more studies related to negative experience. So
exactly.
I mean, relating, okay.
Yes,
so there were not so much about the positive.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, of course, it's very important to research in that area also. For example, how the porn industry has evolved and the media. And that's also a big thing that the whole porn industry serves like a super unrealistic expectation and view to sex. And this is, again, can lead to disappointment while having sex. So it's really important to make those studies highlighting realistic views and not idealizing it, and really talking about it from real experiences. And that's basically what we wanted to do with our question. And then again, focused on the positive side.
Okay. Wow. Seems very ambitious indeed.
It was.
So how did you address? So how did you manage to find out what in general? So, I mean, at least related to your sampled population was the definition of good sex. How did you?
Well, that was interesting because we did not have that like one yes or no question and then one answer, which maybe is what some people do in research or expect from research. But we were like, okay, we want to make it really open, want our participants to speak really freely and as open as possible and not idealizing it. So the essence of our study was basically what's called a sexual script. And now you might wonder, okay, what do they mean by that? And what you can imagine is basically like a movie script. So they're like bullet points or maybe written out sentences describing exactly what is happening. And we gave our participants an example. So they could write whatever they want. That's what we wanted, but still, so they can focus on something. We gave an example.
What they were writing about what exactly?
Yes, so they were describing a good sexual encounter they've experienced within the last 6 months, which was important because it had to be something real, as I said. And an example would be, like the last time or the sexual encounter I'm going to describe, we ate dinner together, then we talked about the day, then we got ready for bed, then we began to cuddle, then caress each other, kiss each other, then we had some oral sex, then we had penetrative sex in various positions, then he climaxes, she climaxes, they cuddle afterwards, fall asleep. That was like a lineup, like a sexual script we gave as an example. And based on that, our participants could write whatever they wanted. And afterwards, which was also really interesting, we asked about specific factors. So a lot of studies have like indicated what factors might influence your perception of sex. So we asked specifically if these factors have an influence of our participants' perception of good sex. So as an example, we asked, is foreplay important for your perception of good sex? And they had to answer yes, because, or no, because. That was also important because we wanted to have texts and more information than just a yes or no, and really find out what they were thinking and if they would put like other factors in there or something.
Okay, that's very nice. So you led them first to have the freedom to write a recent good sex experience.
Yes.
And then you kind of force them, quotation, yes, you force them to answer some specific question because you knew that some factor might mm-hmm. be important for good sex, right? Right, yeah. From previous studies.
Exactly.
Okay, it's very clear.
They were also like interesting points because we asked for the script first because we didn't want them to only think about the factors that we mentioned afterwards. But there was some...
So there was also a rationale why you put the script before.
Yeah, definitely. Because they were just opening the study. Of course, they knew the title and had to go through like the eligibility criteria. And they were like, okay, we want you to give a script of a good sexual encounter. It was completely anonymous, of course, which was also important and helpful for the study, I guess. And then afterwards, we asked for factors, and some people might have not mentioned these factors before. And then they were like, oh, yes, well, foreplay I completely didn't mention because I was only talking about the details of sex. But of course, foreplay is super important. And this is why it was important to also ask about these factors, to include them in our data set.
So now I imagine that there's such a huge amount of information shouldn't have been easy to analyze the data, right?
It was not easy. And here at this point, I also want to say I'm super thankful that I had this amazing group because we were all putting like in the work together and doing teamwork. And like if one person would have done it alone, it would be insane. Respect to all the researchers doing that, by the way. But yes, exactly. We had this huge load of data and we basically analyzed it thematically. So what we did was go through the text, just read it and find themes. So for example, if somebody wrote, well, I went to a party of a friend, met somebody new, had some drinks with him and a nice chat. We danced together. We made out at some point and he asked me to come to his place and so on. We would code it with party, going out, meet somebody new, in this case, novelty, maybe also alcohol, intoxication, dancing. So there were like a lot of themes or what we call it codes, because further we put those codes into bigger themes. And that's what we did. And we try to make sure that every piece of text is read and analyzed by at least three people of our group. So it's as objective as possible. And yes, then you must imagine we have this huge bowl of codes. So like just words basically, or sometimes sentences that we somehow have to put into a conclusion. And we were just sitting in this room, putting them all on the huge board and everyone was writing something. And then we were just sitting there looking at it for a while. And it felt like, and I guess it also looked like those crime series that you see when those people use like the red thread to combine it. Because that's what we tried to do. Out of all those codes, we tried to find, okay, which one can we combine? Where can we find like a bigger theme or like a bigger topic, which is what we want. We want themes or certain factors that influence good sex. So
and that are common to all subjects, right?
Exactly.
So that was the main thing, that
exactly.
There was a common ground in terms of good sex across all the subjects.
Yeah, and that's why, because of course you get a lot of different data, but sometimes you have so many different things that can actually be combined in one code. For example, if there's people in relationships describing that they did a role play or that they used sex toys, or a single person describing they met somebody new, that would all fall under excitement of novelty somehow, because you try something new and therefore get excited. So those are completely different situations, but they can be put under the same theme. And that's basically what we did, trying to find a answer to our question.
Yeah, now we're all here very excited to know what are those themes, those codes that did you find the murderer?
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to say
where.
But yeah, so first you have to keep in mind we compared people in relationships with single people. So basically we had...
Okay, so this was a very important. It is very important. So you had a group. So you actually also asked whether they were in relationship or whether they were single. So you create teams or codes, you call it, for both groups.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we try to, of course, structure them as similar as possible. But and it was also, we had like really similar results. We had some differences, but the most striking was that we found three main themes, which is, first of all, now again, talking about the factors that indicate or that are important for good sex. First of all, it's personal processes. Personal processes describe everything that's happening inside of you without your partner. So pleasure, orgasm, desire. Then we have the theme of context. Context includes the ambience. So like the light, the place, the music that you're in. Context also includes the setting and the novelty that I mentioned before. And then we have the third main theme, not in that hierarchy, but of course it's a third main theme in that point. Interpersonal processes, which is super important because that's also what differentiates sex from masturbation, for example, because if it would be only about the pleasure, then there would be no point in sex compared to masturbation. But you have those interpersonal processes, which are super important. We found communication as a sub-theme. So communication on the, of course, you need verbalized consent level, then on the level of sexual communication or dirty talk, as we know it, then on the area of making fun and jokes, that was mainly in relationships because that was important for them. A lot of people mentioned that.
That's cool, right? So I wouldn't...
Exactly. But a lot of people mentioned, it's important that we can love during sex because sex that we experience is not like in porn movies and like always perfect and everything, but we also want to be able to love about it. I mean, it's still our relationship and it's kind of an affirmation of love that we're doing here. So,
and also going back to your point that so that no one is perfect, right? So, like, exactly. You were mentioning before about the porn industry, right? That we need somehow, if we watch porn, to perform like them, right? But actually having some difficulties might also be fun, and this might also improve communication, improve the enjoyability of sex.
Exactly. Like, in my opinion, the more that people know about research like this and the knowledge about, okay, what is good sex? What do other people experience? The more they also like lessen the pressure on themselves.
Absolutely.
And the expectations.
Absolutely.
And then maybe have another feeling for how they perceive sex or what they expect or also what they need. So, yeah.
Great. So what is the, so you actually probably can become millionaire with such a research, right? So create pamphlet of
I guess,
a list
tell
of
me
things.
How.
I don't know, but we can create some kind of society or something. We can make money about that because indeed people have a lack on knowing what the good sex is. Probably, like you were saying, so singles can learn from couples, right? In this regard, to be a bit more, make fun more about each other. So this probably might.
Yeah, but also I think the other way around because
absolutely.
Like couples that maybe lose the sex drive over a couple of years can look at, okay, what makes good sex for singles. And then they see the whole aspect of novelty, for example. So, yes, exactly, as you said, like this knowledge and like openness about sexual experiences can be quite important to improve people's sex lives.
What is the future? And then we have really few seconds. We are already at the end. So what is the future? And then probably one question. I don't know whether you want to.
Okay.
So what is the future in a few seconds?
Well, I mean, that was kind of a basis research. So you could deepen the research in every single one of the codes that we had into, yeah, a couple of them I mentioned, but also orgasm, desire. You could also look into gender differences. You can look into sexuality differences, like look at the differences between hetero and homosexual couples.
Absolutely.
So there are a lot of things, and I'm still quite happy that we kind of managed to get the space.
Congratulations, Zoe. Was very super interesting, and probably Konstantinos, you have one question. Be very quick, please.
Yes. So my question is: did you also see a difference between genders, like male, female, between those two groups?
Yeah.
Well, in this case, I have to say we didn't have enough males to participate. We wanted to find out, and with a few males we did have participate, we did not find a difference, but that would indeed an idea for further research to really investigate that.
Thanks a lot, guys. 30 seconds are left. Thanks, Hus. Thanks, Konstantinos. Thanks a lot, Zoe. Thanks a lot to every one of you.
Thanks to you, Francesco, for the invitation.
Yeah,
that was
welcome.
Amazing.
Yeah, you're welcome. So thanks to Radio Onde del Lernen to have host us, Radio Salto. And have a good week, guys, with your exam, life and everything, and love and whatever you like to do. Bye, guys. See you next month.